procedure this morning. I think I just heard a buzz, so I'll say good morning again, ladies and gentlemen. We're having a little different procedure, which I've just this moment been told about, so I'm on the telephone. I don't like to do the program on the telephone rather than on Skype because the quality is not nearly as good, but this is the Revisionist Report with Carolyn Yeager, starting a new week. It's Monday, June 27th. I'm on the phone because the Skype line is being used by someone else for RBN. So, rank has its privileges, right? So, I don't know. I've got to hold this phone to my head, and I'm not used to doing that when I'm doing the program. But I want to start out with an apology of sorts to Werner, Rick, and Paul, who had called in towards the end of Friday's show, and tell them that I didn't see that I had more callers. If I had seen it, I would have taken at least one of them. I don't want them to think that, I was just ignoring them, but it was my fault. I imagine the board operator flipped me, but I ignored it, and so as I was busy with whatever I was thinking about. So I should tell you that I'm not looking at my Skype page when I'm doing the show, which is where the callers show up, and I have to switch over to it. Now, that's not a big deal, but if I don't think about it, I don't do it. But it's something I think I'll get more used to. I don't know how I'm going to be notified of callers. I guess I'll be notified of callers the same way today. All right. Now, another thing from Friday is I want to correct an error I made, and that is I said that Friedrich Engels was Jewish. And as soon as I said it, I just kind of threw that in there, thinking that that was right, but did bother me, and I checked it after the show, and he was not Jewish as far as I can tell. So that was something I should have just not added that comment spontaneously, not being absolutely sure of it. But that happens sometimes when you're talking like this on the radio. So today's call-in number is 1-800-313-9443. Now, I'm going to talk today about the latest fake Holocaust survivor stories to come onto the scene. Many of you have probably never heard of Dennis Avey, but what he and his handlers are doing is an example of political correctness, which we were discussing last week. It is because it reinforces the popular conceptions of World War II, which are the foundation for making people go along with the New World Order, as it's being put in place. Now, I've been following Dennis Avey as a manufactured phenomenon, and I say manufactured by British Jews and their Gentile elite co-conspirators since I read three British online newspaper accounts of his story, beginning with the London Times in February 2010, and I did an hour-long radio program on him on March 8, 2010. I then published a long article a little later in March, and I published four more articles on Dennis Avey and his entire scam since then. You'll find all these on CarolynYager.com. We'll be back in a minute.
Do you need help getting your child to behave? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'm willing to give away thousands of my best-selling total transformation programs for free. All you do is tell us how the program works for you and your family. Did it turn around your child's behavior? Did the screaming and arguing stop in your home? Is he doing better in school? The Total Transformation has helped hundreds of thousands of families. I want to see what it can do for you, and I'm willing to let you have it for free. Just order my program, use it with your child, then send me your feedback. I'll refund the purchase price of the program. You keep the Total Transformation program forever, for free. You don't have to struggle with your child's bad behavior one more day, because now you can try my Total Transformation, and the program will be free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
What really gets in the way of your goals and dreams? Time? Money? Education? Well, if it's all of the above, Ashworth College is for you. Ashworth can help you achieve your goals by letting you study at your own pace, online, anywhere, anytime. Your computer is your classroom. With programs as low as $39 a month, Ashworth College is one of the most affordable online schools out there. Just $39 a month. Plus, Ashworth offers over 100 nationally accredited college programs, such as criminal justice, healthcare, technology, and business. You could earn as much as $300,000 more than those without an associate's degree. No high school diploma? Well, Ashworth even offers high school completion programs. So call an Ashworth Career Advisor right now, toll free at 1-866-504-8173. That's 1-866-504-8173. Or go to ashworthtraining.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I'm back on Skype. This is Carolyn Yeager, and I'm happy. This wasn't planned this way. It just so happened that something that was going on Skype wasn't completed yet when my show started. So I need to take these things as they come and be flexible enough. And so now we're going. Let me remind you that the call-in number is 1-800-313-9443. And I was talking about Dennis Abey. And I said that you can find all the articles that I've written about him in the past, well, a little over a year, on my website. I've focused quite a bit on this man. And some of you probably have never heard of him. But Abey's book, The Man Who Broke into Auschwitz, has been released in the United States in a U.S. edition with the iconic image of the Bear Canal main entrance on the cover. That's the one with the railroad tracks, you know, leading into that kind of short tower with the big opening in it that we see constantly over and over again. And that's on the cover, even though Abey never saw Bear Canal. Well, you know, we see this image on articles in the media, too, where they have nothing to do with that. But this is the image that says, the Holocaust. So Abey, let me tell you, was in a British POW camp in Monowitz alongside I.G. Farben the entire time. The book claims on the cover that it is a true story of World War II rather than a true story of the Holocaust or a true story of a survivor or something, which is interesting and revealing for several reasons, because I have just finished reading the book. And out of 259 pages, only 75 pages are about Abey's time in the POW camp at Auschwitz. That's not even 30% of the book. And of those 75 pages, only a few detail his famous break-in, which he describes actually only a single night there. And he doesn't describe it very well anymore because it's been cleaned up so much by his co-author, which I'll go into in a little bit. From all of the crazy things that he originally said about it, that there's not much to it. Now, the first 104 pages that are not about his being at Auschwitz describes his soldiers' experiences in North Africa before he was captured in 1940. So he left England in 1940, and he was captured later that same year. He's been rather embittered, I think, all his life that he wasn't able to be more of a war hero, that he was captured so early and that he was spent most of the war in POW camps. Now, the last 78 pages of this book are about his life after the war and how he finally told his story to BBC. He was always working with the BBC and with their staff people. Rob Broomby, his co-author, is a BBC journalist who he worked most closely with. And they did all the research work to put it together, really. And Avey just talked. He just talked, you know, and told his stories. Now, the book had to be written this way, I say, because the break-in, as I already said, has been cleaned up by Broomby. Okay. Now, let's see. How much time do we have? The first important thing for you to know is that The Man Who Broke Into Auschwitz is copied from two books that Avey certainly read before he came out with his own story. I've spoken of this before in other places at other times. So this is not the first time I have said this. But the first book that I'm going to, of these two books, is The Password is Courage, which was published in 1954, the supposedly true story of British POW Charles Coward, who was billed as, on the back cover of his book, The Man Who Broke Into Auschwitz. Now, the book was actually written by John Castle. It was not written by Coward, and it was written about Coward, just as Avey's book is actually written by journalist and professional writer Rob Broomby, as I've already said. And although Avey, it's supposed to be written by Avey with Broomby. You know how that goes. But I will tell you that Dennis Avey is now... He might be 93 by now, but he's 92 or 93, and I think 93, and that's not why he couldn't write the book, but he could never have written a book. I mean, he's not capable of writing a book or writing his story in a way that would be at all acceptable. So Broomby has written the book in a way that it is well written, but he's done a very good job with very little material, I will say that. But the question is, how much of it is true? Now, Charles Coward, I would say that those first pages that I mentioned, the first 104 pages are true, probably pretty much, and the last 78 pages are true. But what's in between there is true to an extent, as to the framework of it is true, but the details in the and what took place are either not true or exaggerated or changed or, you know, so on. So Charles Coward is, going back to him, and because he's important, because this is, Avey is basing his image on his story on Charles Coward's story and also fellow from this other book. So Coward is famous because he testified at the Nuremberg military tribunals after the war, and his testimony was believed, although now it's considered suspect and even not true. He's also famous because a movie was made about his story in 1962. The well-known actor Dirk Bogarde played the role of Coward. So there's no way that Avey was not familiar with it. In fact, Coward was at the very same camp, E715, in Monowitz, near Monowitz, or actually right beside Monowitz and right beside IG Farben, that Avey was. This is, they were in the same camp. They were both British POWs there at the same time. But Coward also broke into the Monowitz concentration camp in 1944, supposedly, the same year that Avey says he did. And Coward was an acknowledged leader and spokesperson for the POWs and has been written about and mentioned by other POWs over the years. In fact, The Password is Courage is in its 10th edition and still in print, so it's not like it's been forgotten about. So there is no way A.B. doesn't know about this man, Coward. However, in A.B.'s book, Coward does not exist. There is no person, such person ever mentioned. And A.B. presents himself as the only one to do such an audacious thing ever as to, you know, break into Auschwitz camp. Further, all the publicity and interviews surrounding, A.B., Coward is never brought up. A.B. has never mentioned him, and nobody's ever asked him to that I know of. So this is rather strange. Now, the other book A.B. copied for his story is Spectator in Hell by Colin Rushton. But even though it was written by Colin Rushton, it's the story of Arthur Dodd, another British POW who is not capable of writing his own story. We're told that Dodd left school at age 15, so maybe that's why. Now, Rushton's book was published in 1999, in much more recent times. It also has a picture of the Bear Canal entrance on the cover in the most recent edition. It had a picture of Dodd on the cover. But another edition, a more recent edition, has this same picture. Exactly, almost exactly the same view of the Bear Canal entrance. But not only that, but the cover of A.B.'s book is designed exactly the same as the cover of this book, Spectator in Hell, by Colin Rushton. Now, on the back cover of Rushton's book, there's another iconic photograph of the Arbeit macht frei gate at Auschwitz I, and yet, like A.B., Dodd never saw either camp. He was only at Monowitz and some of the surroundings around there, but he never went into the other camps. Yet these kinds of pictures, they always put on books and articles, even though, as I already said, they have nothing particularly to do with it except the idea that it says Auschwitz, and they want to use these particular images to impress people and interest the buyers to buy the book, and also even to make you think that it's a real, it has more to do with it. It's going to tell you more about it than you otherwise know. Because, you know, nobody understands Monowitz. It doesn't exist anymore, so you can't go there and visit it. So they want you to think that all this took place somehow at Auschwitz and one in Birkenau, which it did not. That's not too important, but it's just one of these things. It's the way they carry out this fraud on the public. Now, also, Monowitz is miles away from the two better-known camps of Birkenau and Auschwitz main camp. It's on the other side of the town of Auschwitz. The three places were not as connected as you might think. So the cover, though, was not all that was copied from Spectator in Hell. And I have to show, if you look at the cover of The Man Who Broke Into Auschwitz, and you look at the cover of Rushton's book, I mean, they're set up in exactly the same way, line for line, except a little a different design and color and so on. Well, it's time for another break, and when we get back, I will go into more about Spectator in Hell.
The Grainmaker Grain Mill. Handmade goodness since 1999. Handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand-operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each meal is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain mill, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain mill will be passed down through generation.
flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, the government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper. Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experience process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of microplant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608, 1-908-691-2608, or visit us at hempusa.org.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen, we're back, and I will continue here talking about Dennis Avey's book and how it was copied from two books, the one about Charles Coward, Password is Courage, the other person who supposedly broke into Auschwitz, and the book Spectator in Hell, which is about Arthur Dodd, P.O.W. Arthur Dodd, And I'll just continue by saying that other ways that Avey copies this book, and I could go through all kinds of things, but I, you know, time is short. I will just pick out a couple that, you know, Avey uses the phrase over and over again that Auschwitz was a living hell. When he's talking in his interviews, and in the book, that is his favorite phrase, living hell. And of course Arthur Dodd uses that a lot because he even titles his book Spectator in Hell. So now in both books, the anti-German rhetoric and hate is overwhelming. The portrayal of the guards, their guards, is either as Hogan heroes type of fools and bumblers and lazy. They like to say that they were lazy, or as vicious bullies who beat prisoners up or sometimes beat them to death for no reason. There seems to be no in between. Because they want to, you know, it's propaganda. It's British propaganda for these guys. And they're very loyal Brits, and they hate the Germans. But whether they do or not, whether they really hate the Germans anymore or not, they want to make this case for Britain and for themselves as POWs. They're basically both part of POW networks, actually. They are, and I have come to see Arthur Dodd's book as being a part of an effort to create positive propaganda for the POWs, and they have this concern. And now AB too has been involved in this long before he got the idea or remembered or started talking about his story. That they have this sense that POWs got a raw deal. They feel kind of inferior. Because you know they're seen as not fighting in the war, and they want to bring respect to the POWs, and they want to show that they were not only suffering, they weren't having an easy time in the POW camps, which actually a lot of them were, but this one at Auschwitz seems to be for POWs who had a history of making trouble and not cooperating, and they ended up there, and they maybe had, they had to work, and they, which you're not supposed to force prisoners to work, POWs to work, but they say they were forced to work, but I don't know. A lot of POWs wanted to work because they got extra rations and so on, and they got to go to different places and get out of the camp and so on. But at Auschwitz, I think Camp E715 was probably a little harder, a little less pleasant than some of the others, but it wasn't that bad. Now, as they want to make it out to be, but they want to show that they not only suffered, but that they were also fighting. They were still fighting. They were resisting the Germans. They were involved in sabotage whenever they had the chance. They try to do whatever they can to interfere with the German war effort. But a lot of this is, this is their purpose. I think they're exaggerating a lot, of course, but this is a big part of their purpose in their story, so to speak, what they call their stories. Now, to go on, the most important part of the Rushed and Dodd book is that it talks about three different POWs named Ginger. This is a very important part, or it seemed to be, but it doesn't seem to be going anywhere as I've researched into it. I'd mentioned that Eric Hunt was going to be on the program, but he decided he didn't have his proof worked out. So he thinks he's going to prove something about this Ginger part and maybe something else. But I hope he does. I hope he will. But as I've looked at it, this is what I see. Anyway, those totally unfamiliar with Avey's book, you need to know that the fact that Avey claims he used the nickname Ginger is key to his story, because Avey's credibility is based on the testimony of a Jewish survivor of Monowitz, one Ernst Lobet, or Lobetal, which he gave on videotape in 1995 to the Shoah Foundation, which is Steven Spielberg's vast remembrance operation, now housed at the University of Southern California. And just about in the middle of this several hours long interview, Lobetal tells the story of a British POW who said his name was Ginger, who wrote a letter at Lobet's request to Lobet's sister living in England. Ginger apparently took it upon himself to ask her to send her brother cigarettes, which were good for trading and bartering inside the camp. And according to Lobet's testimony, which we have to believe because he's saying it in the first person, and he has, in this particular part of his testimony, he has no reason to lie or, you know, to make this story up, and it sounds certainly very real. So according to him, once in a while after this meeting with this chance meeting with this Ginger, he would see Ginger, and he would Ginger would call him over and give him a cigarette. Now, this Ginger was smoking a cigarette when Lobet first was watching him, and he threw down his butt so that Lobet could pick it up, and then they talked a little. Now, I'll continue with that after the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you or someone you know suffering from high blood pressure, cholesterol, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural way to overcome these health challenges? Extendivite is made from herbs known to help with these symptoms. Made from garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, and four other herbs, Extendivite goes to work detoxifying heavy metals and killing fungus and virus to enhance your overall health. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a two-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Are you serious about maintaining or improving your health? If you are, you need Terravim. Terravim offers a full line of vitamins, minerals, and herbs for people serious about enjoying a healthy lifestyle. Our product lines include Alamax, Magnesen, Silver 100, Natura Health Products, Gala Herbs, and Terravim's private label, and undergo rigorous clinical studies by leading researchers and contain physician-grade research-based therapeutic doses of nutrients. All of our vitamin, mineral, and herb products are manufactured under current good manufacturing practices in an FDA-registered production facility, and we guarantee that the ingredients in the supplements are exactly what's on the label. We also provide free consultation for all our products along with general wellness information. All orders over $45 ship free, and all orders received by 3 p.m. ship the same day. When shopping online, enter the coupon code RBN for a 10% discount. To order now, call 1-866-647-4372. That's 1-866-647-4372, or visit terravim.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager, and I hope you are following this. It's going to get very interesting. If you don't think it's interesting up to now, of course I do, but then this is my specialty. So I'm going to go into quite a bit of detail about these different gingers that we discover in Spectator in Hell, which is coming up. And because this is a very important part of what we're now looking at, okay? Now, as I said, Ginger, according to Lobet, this person that he called Ginger, was smoking a cigarette when he first watched him, and he was waiting for him to throw down his butt so he could pick it up. This was kind of a common practice, I guess, where POWs who had plenty of cigarettes, and they were in the vicinity of these of the actual inmates, many of whom were Jewish, but not all, because they were all working at the Farben plant, but in different capacities. They would smoke part of their cigarette and throw it down if they were around some of the inmates, and the inmates would pick them up because they had English cigarettes, and they were better than the kind of cigarettes that they generally had access to. So cigarettes were supposedly a bargaining tool in Auschwitz. So Avey, but here's the thing I want to say, that Avey admits in his book, or mentions, that he was never a smoker. He was never a smoker, but according to Lobet, he was smoking a cigarette when he met this person that Avey says is himself. Now, Avey does say that he carried cigarettes around and would give them out, and then he said, well, maybe he puffed on one once in a while. But I think that's an excuse, because if you're not a smoker, you don't puff on one once in a while. Not too much, but that's just one little thing. Now, it was several months later, after this meeting, according to Lobet, that he saw Ginger. Ginger saw him, and Ginger motioned him over and said, you know, motioned him to meet him in a few minutes at some spot somewhere. And when they met there, out of sight, supposedly, of guards or whatever, then they... And there weren't as many guards watching everything you did, certainly when you're on the work site, as you might think. But they, you know, since none of us were there, we don't have much to say about that. But Lobet testifies that this Ginger gave him a letter, 10 packs of cigarettes, and a bar of chocolate from his sister. He was very thrilled. And and he took them, and that is the last that we ever hear about this ginger from Lobet, except that he describes a little bit more about it, and in that ginger's name comes up. But Avi says he, in his book, says he didn't give him all the cigarettes at once because he wouldn't have been able to conceal them in his clothing. So he doled him out a few packs at a time, or a few at a time, or something, or one pack at a time. Anyway, he implies that, and he says that every so often, when he would see Lobet, he would call him over and give him a little more of it, until he gave him all of them. Now, that's two different stories there, but Lobet then does say in his testimony that he distributed some to friends and for future favors. He gave some to his friend Mackey, who he talks about quite a bit, and another guy from that had been in his original transport that he wanted to help out. And then he says they went. And then he remembers that, oh, yes, he had gotten new soles on his shoes for two packs of cigarettes. He says, of course, there was a shoemaker in the camp. Now, the fact that there was a shoemaker in the camp that these prisoners could go to and get their shoes repaired is somewhat belies the kind of descriptions that they want to give about this being a camp where the Germans were trying to kill these prisoners via overwork and starvation, you know, poor food. And the way A.B. describes the food is incredible. But, A.B. and, say, Arthur Dodd in his book describe the conditions at Auschwitz, in which they were not in there, but they say they saw enough of it to be able to describe it, as far, far worse than most survivors do, except for a few that really like to exaggerate. But Lobet is not one of the worst, I'll tell you. He's not a bad guy, and he goes along with some of that stuff, but mostly his story, he's not focused on that, and most of what he tells, I think, is basically right, and the way it was, and so he's not trying to make out like the purpose was to kill everyone, but he, and of course he admits that there's a shoemaker in the camp. And now Lobet also says that this happened in 1944. He said, I'm in Auschwitz. I got a letter from my sister in 1944. He's kind of summing it up, you know, and he's feeling it was a real good feeling for him that he got this letter that he heard from his sister. And so there we have it. This took place in sometime in 1944. I had thought from the way that Avi was writing his story, at a certain point he quit giving dates altogether and didn't give dates again until almost toward the time of the when the camp was evacuated. The camps were evacuated. But I figured that maybe this took place in 1943, but this interlude with Lobet, but no, it was in 1944. Excuse me. Now, also, as I said, Lobet never mentions ginger again, yet Avi continues talking about their ongoing friendship, and he makes a whole lot more out of it than Lobet does. Lobet is the only source of a person named Ginger, and Lobet is the source of Avi's story as being a lifesaver for him, in which he hoped to be named a righteous Gentile by the Yad Vashem Museum in Israel. Well, that's another story. I'm not going to go into that right now. But the importance of the Rushton Dodd book, Spectator in Hell, comes in because it talks about three different British POWs with the name of Ginger. Now, when Avi says, he uses Lobet's testimony saying, oh, there was a soldier named Ginger who did this favor for me. He says, I am Ginger. He said, I have red hair. I had flaming red hair. And I was, I called myself Ginger. But in this book, Spectator in Hell, which doesn't mention Avi, except at the end in a section called Other Accounts, where other POWs contributed a story of their own, you know, to Arthur Dodd's book. Because, like I say, this was kind of a propaganda effort to improve the image of the POWs, particularly at that particular camp. Avey contributed a short essay about his experience. So Avey was very aware of the book Spectator in Hell, since he even wrote something to it and contributed something to it. But in the story about Arthur Dodd, the main part of the book, there is no, or it's really only about the first part of the book. Dennis Avey is never mentioned amongst all the people that Arthur Dodd talks about by name that he knew in the camp. Not that Avey wasn't there, but he may have been quiet. And of course, they were different. They're all in different barracks, and you didn't know everyone because there were a lot of them there. But still, it's kind of strange. So it's like Avey didn't make the big impression there that he tries to say now that he did, as though he was kind of a big leader and so on. So on these three gingers, okay, on page 47, there's the account of an escape of three Brits when they were captured in Italy. Four of them drew lots, but Arthur Dodd, being one of them, drew the low number and was left out. So three of them, including the one that he says was called Ginger, whom Arthur says he met up with again after the war, were carried off in tea chests brought in with Canadian food parcels. And once clear of the area, they headed for Rome and managed to get on a fishing boat bound for Greece and freedom. So then they were out of that war theater. I don't know that they were ever sent back into it. They were awarded the Oak Leaf Medal, he writes. But that was probably not the Ginger who Lobet is talking about. Now, Ginger number two comes in on page 93 of Spectator in Hell. We're told of five British POWs now at Auschwitz Camp E715, which is the one that we're focusing on, who broke out of the camp. One was Arthur, again, because, of course, in this book, Arthur is just, you know, really a big hero. So another was a tall guardsman he knew as Ginger, a different Ginger. Now, they had several days of adventure that he writes about. It's kind of interesting how true. I doubt that any of it is true, but it's an interesting story. And in an attack from the camp authorities, they got separated, and he never saw Ginger and one of the other of the five again. He and two of the others ended up returning to camp, and the whole thing is, as I said, rather unlikely. But that's that Ginger, which who maybe he was killed, maybe he got away, but he was never ever mentioned again by Arthur Dodd as being in the camp. So now on page 174, we meet a real person. We know he's real because he has a last name. His name is Ginger Perry, who was transferred from Auschwitz to Camp E393 Mittellaziek in January 1944. So this Ginger Perry was at Camp 7E715, but then in January 44 he was transferred to another camp called Mittellaziek in this same system. So this Ginger was not in the Auschwitz camp during 1944, at least after January, when Lobet says he got the cigarettes from the Ginger that he met, unless the original meeting took place in 1943, and it was in very early January 44 when the package came, which is possible. But I'm not convinced. You know, that doesn't seem very strong to me. So there's a question whether this Ginger Perry could have been the one that Lobet is talking about. That's true. But both Dennis Avey and Ginger Perry are listed as British POWs at Camp E715 on all the lists. But Dennis Avey never speaks of Ginger Perry, and as I said, or Arthur Dodd. Well, they never speak of him. Arthur Dodd never speaks of Dennis, and Dennis never speaks of Arthur Dodd or Ginger Perry or Charles Coward, or any of these people that are more well known. And he says, of course, that he was the one known as Ginger. He says, I used the name of Ginger because I didn't want people to know who I really, you know, I didn't want to give out my real name. He says he played his cards very close to his chest. He kept to himself, while at the same time he says he was a leader and giving others orders and so on. So he's a very, his story is contradictory. And every time we find a Holocaust survivor story that is a fake, it's full of contradictions. They're all, you know, they're all full of contradictions if you really look at them. But unfortunately, all the general public who reads these books are not looking for contradictions. They're looking to reinforce their belief in it. And that's the problem. But here we go. What this shows me is that ginger was a common way of referring to redheaded soldiers. You know, in England, among all over in the United Kingdom, I think ginger is used just like we use the nickname red in the United States. A lot of redheads are just called red. And in the United Kingdom, it seems that if you're redhead, you're called ginger. So there could have been any number of gingers because there's a lot of redheads, actually, amongst that population. And therefore, you know, we can't be, you know, we're supposed to take it for granted that since Avey says he called himself ginger, which he's never been known as that in any other way, or nobody ever, you know, nobody has ever called him that I know of. He hasn't produced any such evidence. We don't know that his family called him that, but he just picked this out when he was in the camp, he says, and therefore he is the guy who Lovett is talking about. Well, Dennis Lovett, Ernst Lovett died in 2001. He gave his testimony in 1995, and Avey and the BBC didn't know anything about it. Now, I have watched the entire testimony. Eric Hunt went to California on a trip, which I helped to pay for, but that's neither here nor there, but it's just a fact. And I got somebody else to help pay for it. So that he had wanted to go back to California and get a lot more of these testimonies. And I thought that was a really important thing to do. And so I wanted to help him out with it. And he finally did go, earlier this month. And I don't know how many other testimonies he's gotten, but I told him I wanted to see this Lovett testimony, if he would please make sure he got that one and send it to me, which he did. And so I have watched the whole thing, and, it's just that middle part, right in the middle of his testimony, and it was several hours, that he talks about this whole affair and says, well, really, that he talks about anything that's interesting, that's really just about what his life was like in the camp there. And he was there for quite a while, I think. He was there from 43 on and through 44 until they left in 45. And he makes a fairly good impression on me. Anyway, so I've seen all his testimony, and I read Avey's book, and I read all those articles that were interviews and all the news about him from when he first came into the news. And so I'm pretty familiar with this whole story. And what I want to say now is that, Lovett died in 2001. Avey first told of his experiences at Auschwitz in 2005 when he was on a panel on a BBC TV program about war pensions for veterans. So but at this time he had not seen, he didn't know about Lovett's testimony. And he says over and over and over again that he thought that Lovett was dead, that he was sure that he was dead, that he had died on that death march. He had to have died. He couldn't have survived. He was so young. He was so frail. Blah, blah. Well, actually, he wasn't so frail because he had, which I'm not going to go into right at the moment, but Lovett actually got himself into a pretty good job there in the camp, and he was working for German civilians, and he had a lot of privileges, and he had better food because he went and got the food for them every day. That was part of his job for them, and he got to eat that better food, and he even gave it to some of his friends. So, he wasn't, and he had gotten his shoes resold And, you know, he was pretty sharp even though he was young. All right, well, I've used up my long segment here. I hope I didn't waste it. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com. Where reality shatters illusion.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back for our last few minutes, and I just have time to finish what I have wanted to get through today. So I will do that. I was telling you that that Lobet died in 2001, and Avey gave an interview. I didn't tell you this. Avey first told of his experiences at Auschwitz in 2005. I did think I said that, when he was on a panel on a BBC, not TV, radio. It turned out it's a radio program about war pensions for veterans. He was very involved in these veterans organizations that were complaining about the measly war pension that they got. And they also are working, these groups have been working to get compensation from the Germans for their slave labor, so to speak, as they call it, during the time they were POWs. And they're going to get it if they haven't already gotten it. But anyway, in 2001, which is the year of Lobet's death, which Avey did not know anything about. Avey gave a five-hour interview to the Imperial War Museum. Five-hour interview, because he was a war veteran, one of the few still living, and they wanted to get his, finally they were paying attention to these guys. And he did not mention this swap that he says now that his whole book is about, breaking into Auschwitz and so on, which he calls the swap, where he swapped places. with another, with an inmate. I'll go into that on tomorrow's show. When recently he was asked why he didn't mention this, he just said, "I don't know why I didn't choose to." See, this is the best he's got. Now, in A.B.'s own book and in his contribution to Arthur Dodd's book, he writes some, he tries to make the SS look really, really bad, as they all do. And this is one of the stories he writes in both places. It's on page 205 in Dodd's book. I don't have the page number in his own book. But he is telling an improbable story of witnessing a female SS officer. Even better than male SS officers is to make the female SS officers look bad. And this, I'm quoting from him. I'm quoting. Female SS officer was attempting to extract the last dregs of life from a male Jewish carcass. Well, he wasn't dead yet, but she punched the pathetic figure to the ground with her fist and, picking up a substantial rock, crashed it down on his head. This elimination of life from a tormented body was an everyday occurrence. An everyday occurrence, he said. And these bestial acts, together with the memory of the repulsive stench of burning flesh, still bring depression and nausea to Dennis Avey. Well, this was written, you know, about in the third person, like this is what Dennis Avey wrote to us. Now, this is an example of Dennis Avey's true story. As I said, he tries to bring the SS personnel in as often as possible, makes out like they were around beating people up and doing things. And yet, Lobet states flatly in his testimony, and I quote, "The administration of the camp was absolutely and totally in the hands of the inmates." He often said during his testimony that he never saw any SS to speak of. Everything was handled by the capos, the block leaders, etc. These were fellow prisoners. The SS, he says, were never in the camp. They guarded the outside perimeter of the camp. And they were, however, at the Farben work site, supervising things sometimes there, but that was mostly civilians. And there's a whole lot more to tell about this, ladies and gentlemen, that I will continue with tomorrow. Well, I didn't have any calls today. I hope you've been interested in what I've said. And I will invite you to call in with comments tomorrow if you want. And for now, then, I'll say goodbye for today. And please tune in again tomorrow. So long.